Whoa.
You don't even hate your name.
Stewardess, I speak jive.
You hear it in there. The Wookiees are coming. It's Friday when we talk about movies. Star Wars is almost here, but not quite yet. With me in the studio now, host of the Movie Date podcast, Rafer Guzman, film critic for Newsday, and Kristen Meinzer, culture producer for The Takeaway. You two have been busy.
Oh, it's not over yet.
Yes, indeed. Let's just start with the Krampus, which is kind of the fun movie of the weekend. First of all, let's hear a clip.
We can't go anywhere. It's too dangerous. You got it?
Howard, how much ammo do you have?
A couple shells still loaded, maybe a dozen in my pocket. Why?
I think our best bet is to stay put. Board up all the doors and windows, and as soon as the weather breaks, we'll go find her.
I told you we should have gone to my brother's.
Sure, Howard. Christmas on a pig farm.
Jesus was born in a barn.
This is a fun film about a Christmas fiasco, Rafer?
Well, it's a horror comedy, right? It's a family in a posh suburb. Little boy, played by MJ Anthony, believes in Santa Claus, but then gets mad and decides he doesn't believe in Santa Claus. And when he turns his back on Christmas, he unleashes the Krampus, which is kind of the anti-Claus. He comes not to give, but to take. And he starts picking off people one by one, which is a great premise, especially if you've, you know, ever been trapped in a house with your extended family and you, you know, have these fantasies about killing everybody. It's, you know, there's some potential
no,
here.
No. You don't want to do that this way.
Well,
please,
you know, come
no,
on.
I don't want to answer the emails, please. No fantasies about that. But if you do think about the other side of Christmas, that's what the Krampus is all about.
That's what it's trying to do. But I think as a horror film, it's not very scary. It's PG-13. It doesn't want to get sort of R and gory and bloody. But it is kind of creepy and weird. And it kind of raises the question of who this movie is trying to be for. It's too scary for anyone under 13.
Really?
It's not scary enough for anyone over 13. It feels very amateurish. David Kirchner is kind of good. We heard him there in the clip. But the movie is really a bit of a mess.
All right, let's move on to The Letters. Both of you have seen this movie, which is a serious look at Mother Teresa's life.
We do not want you here. We do not need your help. We are Hindu. And do not teach our children about your God.
This is not a place for you, a Christian teacher. You don't belong here. It's best for you to go.
I may not be wanted here, but I am needed.
Mother Teresa, played by Kristen?
Juliet Stevenson. And in this film, we're mostly looking back at her life in the 1940s and 1950s, where she was a cloistered teacher and teaching very privileged girls. And she said, I want to leave the cloister. I want to go out into the world. I want to help the poor. This was a major fight that went all the way up with all the bishops until she was finally granted permission. And then we see her working among the poor. And here's the biggest problem with this movie. It's not something that you watch and think, wow, I understand why she's a saint, which I think is what they were trying to do with the movie, because mostly what she's doing is being patient and waiting and being kind.
Was there ever a debate about why she was a saint? I mean, that would seem to be a fairly settled question, with the exception of Christopher Hitchens, who, of course, took her away. He doesn't appear in this movie.
No, he makes no cameo. I think the one thing this film tries to do, you know, it's called The Letters, and it's based on her correspondence, which revealed something almost like depression that she had for years and years, lots of dark moments, a lot of doubt about her faith and about her role in the world. That's kind of interesting. It's not something you think of when you think of Mother Teresa. But we never see that. We just hear people reading the letters and saying to us she had these, you know, these feelings. And that doesn't really make a case to kind of flesh her out and make her like a worthwhile, an interesting figure, I think, to follow for the length of a biopic. I think we all know why Mother Teresa is a saint, and this film doesn't really tell us anything that new.
And if the theme is the only thing worse than being there's nothing worse than being cloistered. And in fact, going into Calcutta is actually a huge sort of uplift from being cloistered back in the 1940s. We don't really get that from this film.
Yeah, and it's also just, it's not as epic as I want it to be. This isn't Gandhi. This isn't Selma. It's not a movie where you stand up and cheer. And in a lot of ways, it just feels that it should be on a PBS late night 1970s After Dark documentary slot.
Spike Lee has a holiday offering, Chirac, here.
Man, you really think something like that could bring peace?
Y'all know the power we have over them withholding just a day. A week.
You're right. Ooh.
Imagine a month. A year. Oh, they gonna bring the peace.
Suppose that
let the men just dump us.
If we all hold out, who can they go to?
What is this, Rayford?
Well, yeah, as you said, it's the new Spike Lee film. It's a couple things. It's based on, it's sort of a modern-day retelling of Lysistrata, the Greek play, in which the women held a sex strike to bring an end to the Peloponnesian War, which also worked somewhat in Liberia in the early 2000s. That woman who led that sex strike won a Nobel Prize for that. So you've got that. The dialogue rhymes, much like sort of in a Shakespearean way, but also a little
Aristophanes.
Bit of...
Aristophanes.
Yes, exactly. Kind of slam poetry in there as well.
Does it work?
It does not work. I think it's interesting. I think Spike Lee has a lot of stuff going on. It's very, very timely. I mean, it takes place in Chicago. It's all about gun violence and police shootings. It's really topical, really timely. It's a bit of a mess. It doesn't quite work as farce or tragedy, very preachy as Spike Lee tends to get. But I still think he's a really interesting guy who's trying to engage with the world and make sense of it in that strange Spike Lee way that he has. And at moments, it's very interesting.
It's a good try. So these three gifts don't actually work for you for this weekend. But what holiday gifts do you guys remember loving, Rafer?
One of my favorites was a little build-your-own roller coaster with some little tracks and steel balls that you'd throw down that. And I have to say, I actually got that when I was in high school.
Oh, that sounds so fun. Right.
That speaks to your nerdiness, yes?
Oh, there were so many gifts I loved. I'm wild about Christmas and have been since I was a kid. But one of my favorites was when I finally got that Light Bright with those chokeable little pieces that I was desperate for as a child. And I remember just spending hours with that Light Bright.
She still has it as at her desk, actually. Kristen Meinzer, takeaway. Culture producer and co-host of the Movie Date podcast with Rafer Guzman, film critic for Newsday. Have a great weekend, guys.
You too, John.
You too, John.
And we've been asking all of you what your favorite childhood gift is. My first bicycle was my favorite gift, although in less than a year I had my riding privileges revoked when my mother caught me riding double pedaling down a busy boulevard in Denver. I loved that bike.
This is Nick from Yorktown Heights, New York. And my favorite gift was a radio-controlled truck called the Super Blackfoot. It was supposed to be from Santa, but I discovered the present early by accident. My dad and I ended up building it together and having a lot of fun with it over the years, so it was always very special. I was also forever changed by that moment. I was 9 years old, and even today at 30, I still avoid spoiling surprises for myself or others as much as possible.
Beautiful story. Give us one at 877-8-MY-TAKE.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.